water holds four times more heat energy than solid rock. And you'll see in a lot of greenhouses, people put big trom walls there, cement or rock walls or something, to absorb the heat and then to let it off at night. Well, it's awful hard to move a big pile of rock. It's very easy to move water with a little pump. So if you have something like this, now the hot, as water heats up, it's going to expand. And so it's going to go up. You don't need a pump. It's just going to go up automatically there. And then empties into this tank, which is on the north wall. It's the south wall of the house, but it's the north wall of the greenhouse there. Then we have all the soil here prepared the Ellen White method. And so the soil is being wet, being damp, is another heat source. Okay, it's another heat sink, a heat bank, if we want to call it that. All right, but then you have all of this hot water here. And if you just have one sunny day, even in the middle of winter, you'll get this. This water will all heat up here nicely. Now you can take that. You can take that water, and you can heat the adjoining house with that very easily. Some of the nicest heat that you're going to find anywhere in homes or offices is in the floor heat. Okay, it's very comfortable, very nice there. You need a minimum temperature of 90 degrees. Okay, that's no problem getting temperatures a lot hotter than that here. So you can heat that adjoining house, and you can heat this greenhouse here. Now, there are variations here depending on where you're living and how severe the weather is. But this is a heat sink. This is a heat storage system here. If we're in very cold weather, we simply drain this area here in the middle of the night. Okay, so we just turn a valve so that this becomes empty. Now you've got a dead air space here, which is more insulation. If we go back and we study the tabernacle in the wilderness, they had, what, four different covers on that tabernacle, right? And every time you add a cover, you're dividing the temperature from there from over here. And so you can get pretty good insulation. Another thing that I see is people will take an inside drape and they will drape it over this in the wintertime. That's keeping this a lot warmer here. For most places, if you go with this, most places in the United States, in the continental United States, this will allow you to grow tropical foods all winter long. So you can grow your tomatoes and cucumbers and green beans and whatever. Ideally, I'd like for you to have a French drain pipe in there, and I want it to go all the way through, back and forth, and I want it to daylight on both ends. One is going to go right to the very top. That's going to catch the hot air, and we're going to pull that air down. At ground level on that, we have a fan there, and so it's pulling it down, but it's pushing it into the ground. So we don't want to just suck it out to the other side. We want to push it down, because the more air we get to the plant roots without drying it out, the faster those plants are going to grow. So we want to get air. It's doing a number of things. It's getting that heat and putting it down into the ground. Now, my little Omega greenhouse, if the temperature is 120 degrees at the top, and when it goes down through the ground and back out the other side, it's going to exit about 70 to 72 degrees. That means it's lost that heat in the ground. That's going to come up slowly during the night and on overcast days there. And that's insulated, otherwise we'd lose that heat sideways. Somebody else asked me about water. If your pipe fills up with water, obviously it's not going to work. You've got to have that so that it will leach out. and go away. If you, my greenhouse, we're on a bit of a hill, and so it's not a problem to exit that water and run off, you know, just gravity flow out there. When you do that, you got to make sure that that pipe that's taking the water out is screened. Otherwise, you're going to get gophers and rodents through that, and they're going to inhabit the greenhouse. So you've got to be very careful with that to keep the gophers out there. Let's see. The air is actually going into the soil, but it's also coming out the other end there. So pipe is perforated. It's French drain pipe. Okay, we're talking about air to plant roots there. Now, the fastest way to grow a plant, the very fastest way in the whole world, is what we call aeroponics. And you can buy a unit, stands about this high, and it's a big white plastic pipe here with holes in it where we put plant roots into it in little foam packages. So we start the seed, and then we plant these plants in it. How this works, there's a pump in the bottom, and it brings this water solution. This is a hydroponics. It brings it up, and then this water just cascades over those roots. There's no soil whatsoever. It's not sand or rock or anything like that. This water just cascades over it there. That's the fastest way to grow a plant there. Now, I did a lot of experimenting with this, because if it's the fastest way to grow a plant, maybe there was a way, or in my mind I was thinking, maybe there's a way that we could make this very useful here. What I found out is that as I experimented with this, I wanted to use the ocean water salt, see, with those 92 different minerals in it. And when I used that, it just absolutely failed. It did not work there at all. I worked on it until I convinced myself anyway that the hydroponics was not a way to grow good food. There's a lot of hydroponic lettuce in the grocery stores, and it's nice because it's absolutely clean. You've got no dirt, you know. It's clean. It's easy. It has advantages there. It grows fast there. It also doesn't have the flavor or the food value that we want. We need the clay. God said to till the earth. Okay, He didn't say grow hydroponically, but to till the earth there. So till the earth, and it will work for you. The clay holds on to nutrients that we want and then releases it as those plants need it there, and that's what all the soil testing and whatever is for, so that we do the right thing there. Omega Greenhouse. That greenhouse that you saw from the ground up, though, it is about $15,000, okay? Now, people say, oh, that's expensive, but compare that to an addition of the same size, and you'll find out that it's not very expensive. Compare that to the fact that you're going to get heat out of that and food out of that and a lot of other benefits there, and it's not too terribly expensive. From the ground down, I've got a little less than $3,000 in that. I use brick and the insulation board, and then, of course, the fertilizers that we put in there and the pipes and whatever there. But I've got about $3,000, a little less than $3,000 in that. That's 12 feet wide by 20 feet long, 12 by 20, yes. And that size can be expanded by 4-foot increments. So you can have 12 by 20 by 24 by 4-foot increments, you could expand it there. Okay? In a place called Brownsville, California, there's a little country lifestyle center there, and next door to that, we're building a house, just a modest house, and we're going to put a water canopy onto the side of that, the south side of that. And so what happens, ideally, when you have this water canopy attached, now you're going to get heat, you're going to get cooling from that in the summertime. We reverse how that water flows in the summertime. And you get fresh air. And we talk about green building. That means that we build, there's a whole industry of green building. That means when we put carpet and sheetrock and whatever, paint and so forth, that it doesn't off-gas, that we're not getting poisons back into that room. There's a lot of off-gassing and construction products there. So we could build a house totally green according to their standards there, and it would still be toxic in that house. Why? It's because you and I live there, and so we're breathing out toxins there. And when we build, we have to keep the law, which means that we have to build according to the standard and make a tight house there. In a very short time, that is a toxic house because we're breathing out these toxins. Now, if you have a garden room like we're talking about here attached, those plants all need what we're breathing out, okay? And they're going to clean that air. This is far more green than the greenest, according to the building codes there. So this is a good thing there. Okay, some of you were asking about a soil sample. Okay, you want a clean bucket. That means one with no dirt. Take a bucket like that. Put a brand new clean plastic bag into it. Okay, a clean shovel. That means no rust. And then take at least three different samples from your garden, maybe more. End up with maybe a gallon or more of material. And mix that all together so you have a good average. Okay. Out of that, you want to take just a little less than a quart, put it in a quart plastic bag, and then with the U.S. Postal Service, their flat rate box, you're going to send that off to the lab. Now, almost all soils are badly depleted and out of balance. The soil test will tell you what's needed to balance your soil and bring it to fertility. So just remove a little bit of the grass and weeds and whatever on the surface, and then go down and get a sample and do that at least three different places in the garden so you have a good average. Now, I spread that soil out on, again, a brand new clean plastic bag, mixing it all up, and from that I'm going to take that little sample bag out there. Okay, that's the soil form that you have in the handout. Okay, this is talking about growing in pots. Okay, growing in pots. I don't like to grow in pots, but sometimes that's all that people have. Now, when we grow in pots, you go to the store and you get some potting soil and you put it in that pot and you put your plant into it. Basically, what you're doing is growing hydroponically in that pot. That potting soil is just holding the plant there, and then you've got to fertilize it and water it. Now, why do we use potting soil? Because if we put clay in there, clay is going to shrink when it dries. It's going to expand when it gets wet. And so what happens is that people water their plants. If they're using clay, we need the clay to grow good food. So people water their plant because they've got some clay in there, and pretty soon the water's running out the bottom, and they think, oh, I've watered enough, I'm wasting water, and they quit watering. Very often what I find in that situation, we take that plant out of there, we cut right through that ball, and the center is bone dry. That plant is trying to live off of a little bit of water and soil around the edge there. You're not going to get a good plant. You're not going to get a healthy plant with that. So we have to use potting soil. so that we don't have the shrinking and expanding there. But now you have to use lots of fertilizer, and you have to water it often. Sometimes in the middle of summer, it might be two or three times a day there. Typically, it's mostly organic matter. Also contains perlite, which is light and fluffy, holds water, releases to the plant as needed. Very poor quality food. It's used in hydroponic systems, but potting there. Okay, aeroponics we discussed earlier there. Now, Jared's formula. This is Jared Thurman. Some of you know him. So he made a potting soil, which is, well, this is just showing how he used that potting soil. He made a potting soil. We've got a formula for that. And the idea was, this was a few years back, the idea was that he would manufacture this soil and that he would sell it. And we found out that shipping soil across the United States just didn't make sense there. So we'd have to do it locally there. His idea was that by manufacturing this and selling it, that he would be able to support orphanages that he has in Jamaica and Haiti and Africa, other places around the world. So what he decided instead was simply to give it away, and you can use it any way you want to. If you wanted to make a donation to one of his orphanages, you could do that there. Now here what he's doing, he's got this, he's got basically the Ellen White method here. Okay, so we've got Jared's formula up here. We've got two-thirds topsoil mixed with one-third peat moss. We've got that rock layer that we talked about. Okay, and the Ellen White planting method, that's going to change the electrical magnetic field in there. That was part of the science of the soil that was told to Ellen White by the angel. And then she wrote it in a very easy way to understand. Formula for drainage, if used for permanent. Oh, down here. So this is rock here, but this is also rock down here. If this is a permanent potting mix, if it's not, then I use wood chips down here. If it's just going to be for one season, for drainage. Let's see, one on the left. A year later, potting soil. I can't even read that. Those are moringa plants, but you can see a marked difference between those two plants. The one on your right is blooming, and that is using Jared's formula. Did very, very well. And both plants were planted at the same time. Very similar situations, but you can see quite a difference there. Okay, there's another formula that you can use here, and this is to change plants. Maybe you have plants growing but not producing anything. Several of you have said, well, I've got an apple tree, or I've got, you know, a certain kind of plant, but it didn't give me many apples. It didn't give me much produce. Same thing happens with tomatoes. There's a fellow in Sacramento, nice young fellow, had a small backyard, and so he built a trellis that was 10 feet tall for his tomatoes in the backyard. And he would go around the neighborhood, he would get manure, and he would get leaves and straw and whatever. He would just pile it up. Now, this was in a part of Sacramento where Bermuda grass was just everywhere. So he needed some things to crowd out the Bermuda grass there. I went to visit him, and his tomato plants, sure enough, they grew 10 feet tall, and they grew another 4 feet above that. So he had 14-foot tall tomato plants there. I had more tomatoes on a 6 or 7 foot tall plant that I can reach and pick and eat than he had on 14 foot tall tomato plants. So use the right thing, the right formula, and you'll get the produce that you need. We don't need all that extra growth there. So how do you change a plant from growing leaves and stems to growing flowers and fruit? Here's the formula. You see, you've got a Coke can over here and a some vinegar, and what's the other one there? That is ammonia, just household ammonia, okay? All right, let's look at this here. I was in garden class one night and was explaining this formula. And so here it is. You take a 5-gallon bucket to begin with, put in a pint of ammonia, it's half a quart, a whole quart of vinegar, and one can of Coke regular or Pepsi regular. You want the sugar as well as the phosphoric acid. Can't be dyed drink. Okay, and then if you have it, use about a quart of ocean water. That's optional. It'll work even without it. Now, you can see that I've got a little fig tree there alongside of me there. So I was drenching that tree. So I drenched that tree. It means I just poured it all over that tree. It's in a pot, just a little fig tree there. And then somebody came in late and said, "Well, I wasn't sure about that." So I drenched that tree again. Then there's this lady that always shows up late, and she came when the class was all over. She said, "Oh, what'd you talk about tonight?" And I told her, and she said, "Well, can I see that?" So that poor little tree got drenched 3 times that night there. Now, I took that tree home, and in a week's time, it had little tiny figs growing there, I could see. Now, I didn't bring that back until about 2 weeks later. 2 weeks later, the figs were just big enough that you could see them easily. We switched that tree that quickly. Now, when we plant a tree, we want it to be big enough and strong enough before we switch it over to bearing fruit. Another illustration may be that with the technology that we have today, a 10-year-old little girl could, with hormones and whatever, she could get pregnant and have a child. Now, that would be a sin against that girl there. But it's there. That little girl would be so much better off if she were to mature at least till about 17 or 18, and then she would have the body and the mental capacity to be a good mother to a child. She doesn't have that ability when she's small. Let's go back to the trees there. It's not a sin against that tree to treat it this way, but we want that tree to mature and to get strong enough before we switch it over there. So anyway, I brought that tree back. I do that pretty regularly in my classes there. And then I will give it away. That tree is actually would produce more over the life of the tree if we allowed it to get big enough and strong enough. When we force it too early, it's going to stunt the tree and it's not going to do as well. Go back to Leviticus, and God said, when you plant a tree, for the first 3 years, when you go into the promised land, you plant a tree. The first 3 years, count that tree as uncircumcised, as not usable there. Okay, so what do farmers do with this? They pick the fruit off. If you have any little fruits that come, pick it off, just drop it on the ground. It'll recycle. We want the energy to go into the tree to make the tree strong. And when it's big enough, then it will produce far, far more for us. Oh, a drench is a liquid. Okay, a drench is a liquid. And see, you start with a 5-gallon bucket and then use that formula. And then when it's all in there, then fill it up with water, mix it up. And then just drench it. Just pour it over that plant.
Pour it on.
And yes.
And it doesn't matter how much.
Yes, it does matter how much. Yes. Now, I overdid that tree, but it does matter how much. And 5 gallons would be enough for probably a 30-foot row in the garden. Yeah.
How much per plant would you
say? How big is the plant? See, if I want to get a 10-foot tall apple tree, the fir tree that you've got in your garden, I might use all 5 gallons on that.
What about your tomato plants?
About what?
Do you use it for tomato plants?
Oh, yes. Worked very well for tomato plants. Yes, yes. Since you brought that up, I'll tell a story. There was a farmer in Pennsylvania. He contracted with a baby food manufacturing company to grow tomatoes for baby food. His tomatoes got about this high, and they were not producing. He had very few tomatoes. He called International Ag Labs and said, "What can you do?" And they mixed up this type of a drench. It wasn't these materials, but they did it scientifically. Mixed up a drench and had him spray that whole field. In about a week's time, those tomato plants change. You can see this. It works very fast there. In about a week's time, that field began turning yellow with flowers. In 2 weeks' time, it was had lots of yellow flowers and lots of tiny little tomatoes coming. Now, as the season went and progressed, he could see that towards the end of summer that the flowers that were coming on now and making little green tomatoes now, they didn't have enough time to ripen before frost. This is back in Pennsylvania. So he switched it back. Now they went back to vegetative growth. This is reproductive growth. See, we want tomatoes. That's reproductive growth. So now they switched it back to vegetative growth because the leaves are the factory for the plant. And now the tomato plants quit putting on so many flowers. They still put on some, but they quit putting on so many flowers and they started growing leaves and just finished that season off with just a bang. So he had a bumper crop from using the right materials there. Okay. Now, obviously this is not organic. There's a product called Bloomint that I use instead, which is, so it cost me a little to do that. I don't have to fuss with all of this, and I just mix it and spray it on, and it'll do the same thing and do a better job. I don't use the Coke anymore. They've changed that formula there. If your tomato flowers died, you made a mistake in the mixing here somehow or other. I'll tell you a story on my sister, okay? she was growing tomato plants in her backyard, and I sent her a formula as to what to add there, and we were doing, you know, so many pounds of this, and then it went to ounces for, what was that, boron. Yeah, and she forgot to change from pounds to ounces and put pounds of boron there and killed everything. So if it's out of balance, it's going to kill it. If you do it right, and don't overdo it, you're going to be all right. It'll be fine. Anything that's done to excess is not good there. Okay, this thing called transplant formula is just really, really good product. And where we've used it, where I've seen it used and how I've used it, it's one of the very best products to get a plant started off to a good start. And we use it in other places besides just transplanting. For instance, in a vineyard, this is the first place I saw it used, they took one row of that vineyard and used the transplant formula on it. Everything else was the same. No other change. Same fertilizer, same water, same soil, everything the same. That one row that had the transplant formula just outproduced the rest by a long shot there. So that's a good product, and we use it when we put seeds in the ground. We use it on existing trees. We use it for transplanting. It has the right nutrients in it, but what we're doing is we're putting life in that soil. Remember, that's the most important thing that we're going to do. We have to have the right minerals for that life to work on, but that will change that soil. Yeah, I think you can get this transplant formula on Amazon. I don't know about the nurseries. There are a lot of different formulas for transplanting. I've used a lot of different ones over the years. This particular one I have found more beneficial. And in our new recommendations coming out, I see that it's being used over a whole lot more than it used to be anyway. Okay, if you can't buy it, you can make your own, but you make that with the stuff that comes out of this garden in a box there, which we saw earlier here. This is an interesting thing. We were planting at Leone Meadows. We were planting cabbage and broccoli, cauliflower, whatever. And this is in a greenhouse, and we've got all these little plants out there. And you can see the transplant formula that we made in a bucket there. That's before we had this particular one there. And came back the next morning, and half those plants were gone. Mice got in that greenhouse overnight and just ate them off. So we took styrofoam cups, cut the bottoms out, and put it over the plants, replanted what had been eaten there. And that was enough to keep the mice out, and they all matured just fine. Did very well there. Let's talk about planting seeds. Often we have tiny, tiny seeds. And you can find that planting seeds will become much easier if you will take, let's take carrot seeds, for instance. They're so small. Or lettuce seeds there. So if you'll take the seeds and mix them with a handful of sand, let's say you take just a little bit of seeds and mix it with a handful of sand, there. And this takes a little getting used to, but when this is mixed up, now you've got your row made there, and so you take this stuff and you just sling it like that. It takes a little getting used to there. Now what'll happen, you've planted in that row, but you spread that out, and it's just easier, and you'll have less weeding to do, less thinning to do, which is important. Here's a little 7-year-old girl. This was at Leone Meadows. Planting, and there you can see the same plants that got eaten up by the, well, I got to go to the next one. The same plants that got eaten up once we put those little cups around them did just fine there. Now this was in the middle of winter. It was one of those days when it was, cloud would come over and it'd snow, and then the sun would come out. And so we were planting. And we were planting some trees outside, the Ellen White method, whatever, when this was happening. And I had people go in the greenhouse. Both ends of the greenhouse opened up. It's kind of a long, narrow greenhouse. And so both ends opened up. Whenever the sun came out, I would ask people to walk in the greenhouse. Just walk in the greenhouse so you see what it feels like. It's snowing out, okay? It's cold. And everybody had the same comment, wow, it's hot in there. So just something that we use to help with your crop. Okay. I think we want to get through here as soon as we can. We're mixing a transplant water type of thing. There's that 7-year-old little girl there planting. Okay, I think we want to get through. Now, we go to an awful lot of work to get air into that soil, get it fluffed up nicely. Don't walk on it like this, okay? The only time it's okay to walk on it is when you have put seeds down and you just want to make it tight. But other than that, don't walk on the soil there. Okay, somebody asked me about deer proofs and gopher proof non-poisonous methods. Okay, let's go to the deer proof fencing here. This is called fickle fence, and basically you need here. Here's another picture of it, putting it up there. That is a plastic fence, and if you go to Home Depot, they have a deer and bird netting. Don't get that; it's not strong enough. The deer will find out they can walk right through it, and as soon as they do, they're in there every day. This stuff is strong enough here that the deer can't go through it. Now, this comes in 7.5 foot tall material there. And you can see we've even got women out here in a dress putting this thing in. This is our church garden there.
So this is 7.5 feet tall. We take 8-foot T-posts and we pound them down so you've got 6 feet above the ground, and then the fence comes down and out this way. Okay? You want it to come out. Because a deer can get his nose underneath there and be right in your garden there. But when it comes out, they stand on that and they get confused and can't get through. The same thing will happen with skunk and fox and other critters that want to get in there. And so the first year you may have to put some bricks or rocks or something around the edge there. But after that, the weeds will grow through and they won't be able to get in. The trench that we see here, that was for the gopher wire. And so that is standing, we stand that gopher wire straight up in the ditch there. You can't put it in with the T-post because then the T-post doesn't have anything to hold it there. So you've got to put it either inside or outside there. I like this stuff. It's about $330. It's about 330 feet of material for about $300. And so it's fairly inexpensive. It has advantages and disadvantages. Advantages that it's easy to put up. Two or three people can put it up quite easily. Disadvantages, if fire gets close to it at all, it's plastic, it melts, it's gone. Advantages, you take scissors and you cut out that burned part and you just patch it and put it back in there. So it has those advantages. I did find out that it has about a 10-year life. That's my own experience with it. After about 10 years, it begins to get brittle. It's plastic there, but it lasts about 10 years. It is much less expensive than the other fences and much easier to put up. But if you have the ability to put up the permanent deer fence, then that would be good. Now, this is only going to be 6 feet tall at the top here. A deer can easily jump over that, right? Easily jump over that. So what do we do? A deer will not jump into a small area. So inside the garden, within the first 10 feet here, you want a row of something. It could be a row of berries. It could be grapes or anything that looks like another fence in there. The deer will not jump into that area. It's too tight for them. They want a big area where they can run and jump and get out. So keep that in mind. The second fence doesn't have to be 6 feet tall. The second fence can be just this tall, and it'll do just fine. Matter of fact, if you had a garden that was 10 feet wide and 50 feet long, 100 feet long, doesn't matter, but just 10 feet wide, you can have a 4-foot fence there, and the deer won't jump into that there. Now, if you have a 3-foot fence there, they can reach their neck over and eat your produce there. Okay, gophers and rodents, they are just a real problem there. Gophers are vegetarians, and they especially enjoy tomatoes and root vegetables. I can remember growing potatoes, and I'm going to dig those potatoes next week. Really nice crop of them there. By the time I got out there next week, they were gone. Yeah, the gophers had totally taken them out. So you have to control the gophers, or they'll just take over. What else can we do? We use the gopher fence, for one thing, going straight up and down in the ground, and you have to have about 6 inches of that gopher fence above ground. Otherwise, the gopher will come up to it and just walk over it. There, it has to be up. He won't climb that. See, he won't climb it because if he climbs it, he knows he's dinner for a hawk or an owl or a skunk or something. So he won't climb that there. But you do have to have that. You have to patrol that fence because I've seen several things happen. One is that gopher come up and he makes these mounds there, and so he makes a mound close to your fence until the mound is higher than the fence and he can just drop into your garden there. Another thing that happens is that that fence gets stomped on, gets knocked over one way or other there. You've got to keep it upright, so you have to watch out for those things there.
Okay, let's go to another thing that we can use for gophers. And that is a product called MoleMax, M-O-L-E-M-A-X. Or use castor oil mixed with dishwashing liquid.
Dove.
Dawn. Dishwashing and lots of water and spread it out there. They rodents just they dislike castor oil or any part of that plant. Now, people have given me gopher plants, said the gopher won't touch this, you know, and so you plant gopher plants around your garden, and sure enough, they don't touch the gopher plants, but they go around them and under them, and they get your produce anyway. So, but the MoleMax works pretty good, and the castor oil works pretty good also there. Okay, let's see. That's a good gopher fence there. If you have real problems, you might want to go. That's a 24-inch fence. You might want to go to a 30 or 36-inch. Well, okay, what doesn't work well? Okay, shooting, trapping, and poisoning, they all work. Get that kid out there, your grandson out there with his gun, and pay him $1 per gopher, huh? That'll work. Deterrence with noise, lights, smells, and so forth, dogs and cats, they all work to some extent. Seems like every time I teach a new class, that somebody will come to me and say, oh, I've got this wonderful device for gophers. And there are several different variations on it, but one is a tube that goes down in the ground about this far, and it has batteries in it, and it puts out a little noise. So every 45 seconds or so, it's going to go zzz, zzz, and that puts a vibration into the ground. And so sure enough, the gophers hear that there's something there, and they avoid it. Until they realize that that's just a dinner bell and there's lots of good food over there.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.